Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Daniela from the Lower East Side. You are listening to 25 Years in 25 Days on WNYC.
Today, it's 1998.
Then I realized no one had told her about the end of love in Manhattan. Welcome to the age of uninnocence.
I want you to listen to me. I'm going to say this again. I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
On the University of Wyoming campus, where Matthew Shepard was a freshman, students are wearing yellow ribbons today.
As you know, the Justice Department and 20 state attorney generals today have filed lawsuits against Microsoft Corporation.
I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the dude.
In 1998, John Hume and David Trimble won the Nobel Peace Prize for their work on Northern Ireland. Shakespeare in Love won the Oscar for Best Picture. The Tony for Best Play went to Art by Yasmina Reza. The Pulitzer Prize for Fiction, American Pastoral by Philip Roth. And these were among the books that made it to number one on the New York Times nonfiction bestseller list. The Greatest Generation by Tom Brokaw was 1998. Not to be outdone, The Century by Peter Jennings. We Are Our Mother's Daughters by Cokie Roberts. A Pirate Looks at 50 by Jimmy Buffett. And Tuesdays with Mari by Mitch Albom. And 1998 was the year that President Bill Clinton was impeached. Remember that impeachment is his indictment by the House of Representatives. That happened, even though he was acquitted by the Senate. And one of those impeaching congressmen was a young Republican from South Carolina named Lindsey Graham.
Today, Republicans, with a small handful of Democrats, will vote to impeach President Clinton. Why? Because we believe he committed crimes resulting in cheating our legal system. We believe he lied under oath numerous times, that he tampered with evidence, that he conspired to present false testimony to a court of law. We believe he assaulted our legal system in every way. Let it be said that any president who cheats our institutions shall be impeached.
Lindsey Graham, then just a 33-year-old second-term congressman. Let's get a take on 1998 from New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd, who won a Pulitzer for her columns on the Clinton-Lewinsky year of the impeachment. Hi, Maureen. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hey, Brian. Happy anniversary.
Thank you. Do you remember what you first thought when you heard about the Clinton-Lewinsky affair? Did you think the president would have to resign?
No. It was a very strange time in Washington. It was almost Midsummer Night's Dream, where the whole city was gripped with this crazy fever, where you knew the idea of impeaching the president over something that so many politicians have done here for centuries was nuts. You know, my brothers grew up as pages in the days of when Richard Nixon and JFK were senators, and they had to, make up excuses for politicians all the time to their wives when they answered the phone in the cloakroom. And it was just this craziness.
In historical context, 10 years earlier in the 1988 presidential campaign, Gary Hart got run out of the race when word of his affair with Donna Rice became public. And 10 years later, when Elliot Spitzer's prostitution scandal broke, a much less serious matter by most people's standards, I think, he did resign immediately. So how did the Clinton machine, and so much of your reporting was on the Clinton machine, manage to slow down the frenzy enough to even put up a fight?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I was going to mention Gary Hart because he and Monica Lewinsky seem like the only two people who were sort of flies in amber, you know, these permanent kind of victims, Hart of the press and Monica of the Clintons. And everyone else kind of has moved on and is beyond shame. And Bill is more popular than ever. But so your question is how the Clinton machine...
Things were going so fast on those first days.
Right.
You know, the Sunday talk shows were speculating about resignation. So they managed to slow down the frenzy enough to put up an extended fight.
Yeah, that's true. But also, at some level, the idea that they should be impeached. I mean, Newt Gingrich was, you know, supporting impeachment while he was having an affair with a young woman he'd met on the Hill who he, you know... So there was so much hypocrisy about the whole thing, and the Republicans knew it, that you know, their case was just ridiculous. And Ken Starr was the one who seemed like the heavy-breathing sex addict. You know, the Starr Report was like a 500-page Harold Robbins novel. So, you know, I just think the Clintons are brilliant at fighting back, and they did do a horrible thing in sort of painting Monica as Hillary recently. It turned out in Diane Blair's papers, she wrote that Hillary called her a narcissistic Looney Tune, and people were painting her as a troubled young woman to try and save Bill, and that was low, looking, but effective.
And looking back, you wrote in January of 98, which was just the very beginning of it, January, that, quote, Hillary isn't throwing Bill's stuff out on the White House lawn because she is as committed to their repugnant arrangement as he is. Why did you use repugnant then? I realize it was a long time ago. And do you still consider it a repugnant arrangement now?
Yes, because I think that Hillary was part of the damage control. The damage control was to paint Monica as a troubled young woman. They couldn't just say, they should have just said, and, you know, at one point Bill Clinton asked Dick Morris to poll on this, whether he should just tell the truth, and Dick Morris told him not to. They should have just said, yes, he had an affair with this young woman, and he's sorry. I'm sure he still could have gotten through it, but instead they demonized her. And the feminists, who ordinarily should be supporting her, all went on the side of Bill and Hillary because he represented so many progressive policies for women. So they sort of sacrificed Monica on the altar of these progressive policies. So he was doing regressive male behavior but got away with it because of his progressive qualities. And people just shouldn't be in that situation where they have to choose between a man's policies and his bad treatment of a young woman who worked for him.
So those were the repugnant political compromises, but I got the sense that when you referred to their repugnant arrangement, you meant something about their marriage, no?
No, I meant their demonization of Monica. I think if he, you know, wants to act like a teenager on the Titanic running around the boat with Monica, then if he gets caught, he should just admit what he did and ask for forgiveness. I think their tendency to demonize his mistresses when the mistresses were telling the truth is repugnant.
Here is perhaps the most famous Hillary Clinton moment from 1998 when she went on the Today Show shortly after the scandal broke in January to put it in her chosen political context.
Look at the very people who are involved in this. They have popped up in other settings. This is the great story here for anybody willing to find it and write about it and explain it, is this vast right-wing conspiracy that has been conspiring against my husband since the day he announced for president. A few journalists have kind of caught on to it and explained it, but it has not yet been fully revealed to the American public.
So a crackly old version of the vast right-wing conspiracy. What did you think of that at the time, and what do you think of it now?
Well, I think there was this huge, horrible Republican movement against him, which is ironic because Newt Gingrich clearly had a boy crush on him. Bill O'Reilly says today that the only reason Hillary should get elected is because you get Bill, and Bill knows what he's doing. So Republicans have so much more respect for him and worked with him. Even during impeachment, he would sneak over Newt Gingrich so they could work together, you know, on the budget or whatever. So, you know, Republicans seem to have so much more respect for him than they do for President Obama, and yet they were after him in this horrible way. So she's right about that. But, you know, that's a separate issue from how the Clinton machine dealt with women who accused Bill, Monica did not accuse him, with women who it turned out he had been involved with. They were ruthless, you know.
And you also declared back then, and it was so fun, Maureen, to go back and read your old columns from 98.
Oh, thank you.
That Bill Clinton had determined his own place in history. He will be remembered as the pre-apic president. So I had to look up pre-apic yesterday. But I see it basically means he's always erect. And yet that's probably not the top item in most people's minds about him anymore.
That's That's so funny. I also got to use the word satyriasis, which is probably the only time I'm going to get to use that. But you know,
did you use priapic on purpose to make people look it up and say, "Oh, that."
I know, I do like to do that, I'm sorry to admit. But the joke about Bill Clinton is when he drives through a car wash in a convertible with the top down, somebody else gets wet. And, you know, he is the first president in history to sort of go through something, a scandal like that, and come out on the other side. He is now more popular than he has been at any time except at the very beginning of his presidency. And in many instances, he's had to help out President Obama, you know, to sell his policies and explain, you know, President Obama called him the Secretary of Explaining Stuff.
For that amazing speech, one of the most amazing political speeches I've ever seen at the 2012 Democratic Convention.
Yes. So he's bigger than ever. And, you know, again, he's going to have to kind of drag another cerebral candidate up the hill with Hillary. So even David Axelrod told me that Bill Clinton is the most seductive character that we've seen in American politics in our lifetime. And partly it's that resilience. People are just, and partly it's the happy warrior thing, the desire to get up every day and go at it, no matter how difficult. You know, that unfailing belief that in the future things will be better, and the zest in the hand-to-hand combat of politics and policy. And people compare that to Obama, and even James Carville said, you know, about President Obama, it's amazing that a man can be so successful. It's something he doesn't really like. It's like if you found out that Peyton Manning didn't like to play football.
Huh. Yeah,
so, you know, I think we're craving a president who really wants to try. In some ways, it seems like President Obama has stopped trying.
You're listening to WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. It's New York and New Jersey Public Radio. It's 25 years and 25 days, our anniversary series here on The Brian Lehrer Show. The year is 1998 with the impeachment saga, but we're going to tie it to today as well with New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd, as we're trying to do throughout the series. And Maureen, when people say that today is the most polarized moment in Washington in memory, I think we sometimes forget how crazy partisan it was during the Clinton years. And I wonder how you would compare today's polarization to 1998, when we were all, in a way, saying the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, William Safire always used to write that back in the days of Lincoln, you know, it was horrible, too. And people are, reporters are just ahistorical. But I do think that to a certain extent, it's more broken than I've ever seen it. And certainly President Obama does not have the temperament to try and break through. I think someone like Bill Clinton would. But I do think that the Iraq War had something to do with it. I think that, you know, in some ways, W took the family station wagon and crashed it into the globe on that one. Because when you take the country into a fake war, and people like Hillary Clinton helped him do that, you know, in a way, it just breaks the system. I mean, I do think the system is broken for other reasons, but I don't think that helped.
Right. But then, in theory, the country should have been ready to be unified by Barack Obama, but it didn't happen. And here is a clip of Bill Clinton in 2009, the first year of the Obama presidency, on the Obama hate that was already springing up. David Gregory asked the question on Meet the Press.
Your wife famously talked about the vast right-wing conspiracy targeting you. As you look at this opposition on the right to President Obama, is it still there?
Oh, you bet. Sure it is. It's not as strong as it was because America's changed demographically, but it's as virulent as it was. I mean, they're saying things about him. You know, it's like when they accused me of murder and all that stuff they did. But it's not really good for the Republicans of the country what's going on now. I mean, they may be hurting President Obama. They can take his numbers down. They can run his opposition up. But fundamentally, he and his team have a positive agenda for America. Their agenda seems to be wanting him to fail. And that's not a prescription for a good America.
So President Clinton in 2009. And Maureen Dowd, that was just months into the Obama administration. And, you know, in the 2008 primaries, when Obama supporters said one reason to vote for him would be that Hillary was too polarizing historically and Obama could bring the nation together, I actually never believed it because I never thought it was about Hillary. It's because that's how the Republicans fight. Do you think that's the right way to look at it?
Yes, I think you're right. And, you know, I think that different developments in politics like the Tea Party has made it really hard because someone like Boehner, Speaker Boehner, I do think left to his own devices would be much more cooperative with President Obama. I'm sure they would be golfing and putting some things together. But unfortunately, he got yanked on a leash by the Tea Party and couldn't even follow his own natural instincts. So, we're just living in a really it's sad because President Obama had said we didn't have to be this red and blue nation, but we do. And that's how, you know, all our media is set up, too, on TV. And it's exhausting.
More and more. And so to speculate about the future a little bit, Hillary Clinton is seen so much differently now than when she was first lady, more of a hawk, more of a pro, more of a centrist.
Right.
Do you think she, of all people, ironically, has the potential to end the culture wars era if she's elected president?
You know, I just don't know. And I think the horrible thing I've learned covering all these presidencies is that you don't know during a campaign. W promised to have a humble foreign policy, and it didn't work out that way. Barack Obama promised to unite the country, and it didn't work out that way. So I don't think we know what a president is going to be like until it happens. And as Harold Macmillan said, events, dear boy, events, you know, the events and the enormous pressure of the White House come to bear. But I think the open question to me about Hillary is, has she learned lessons from the horrible things that she's gone through? When health care failed, did she learn that if she had made the compromises her husband recommended, she could have gotten health care, and that being stubborn and defensive are not good traits, you know? And has she learned lessons from the bad things that have happened, or has it just made her more defensive and scarred? And I think it's very hard to tell until people become president, because they are basically, Warren Beatty once said that politicians are like actors, but they never get to change their roles. And so that's what makes them crazy, because they're stuck in the same role. So they're acting during a campaign and saying things, but that doesn't turn out to be the way they behave, unfortunately.
New York Times columnist Maureen Dowd, thanks for helping us out on 25 years in 25 days, looking back, looking sideways, looking forward. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian. You're the best.
Coming up Monday on 25 Years and 25 Days, it's 1999, and a story we did not cover that year and wish we did. The repeal of Glass-Steagall. We go out with the Billboard number one song of 1998. It's Too Close by Next.